Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I'm joined by my buddy Hayden Winks from Roto World, because I was sitting here, you know, looking at making some bets, working on my projections, working on my rankings for the 2020 season, and you know, I think a huge question is, what is the 2020 NFL season going to look like? I don't think that very many of us actually know the answer to that question, because we're going to be playing with no fans, we're going to have no crowds, we're going to have no rookie mini camps, no OTAs, training camp is going to be pretty rushed, the travel schedule is certainly going to be very different for many of these teams. So Hayden is, you know, a very analytically inclined NFL mind, I think a guy that a lot of us could learn a lot from as it pertains to fantasy sports, DFS, and gambling. So wanted to have Hayden on the show to discuss what the 2020 NFL season might look like, and I was pleasantly surprised. You know, I thought the conversation was great. I hope that you guys enjoy it. Of course, if you want to support the show, you can leave a rating or review on iTunes. That is super helpful, super useful. I will appreciate it. You can also get bonus episodes of the show on patreon.com/takecast. Now let's go ahead and get into the episode. All right, everyone, welcoming in Hayden Winks to the podcast. Kind of was sitting down this last week thinking of, like, you know, it's time to start gambling on the NFL, because it's going to happen. One way or another, Hayden, they are making the NFL happen. We are not going to go through 2020 without professional football. And it's not going to be like a normal NFL season. And so before I started placing these wagers, I thought I should probably talk to someone who's, like, you know, good at math and, like, a little bit more thoughtful about ways to get money down and angles down. So inviting you on the show to talk about, you know, kind of what the 2020 season is going to look like. How are you? Are you feeling optimistic? How are we feeling about football in 2020?
Yeah, I mean, I think the last, like, couple weeks with the coronavirus stuff, it's getting a little bit better. A lot more testing. Positive rate numbers are down. The NFL hasn't budged on anything that they're doing except for these basically worthless camps way out in May. So yeah, I'm optimistic. I'm hoping we get a full 17-week season and slide into the playoffs. I think the NFL is in a good spot.
Yeah, I mean, my basic assumption right now is that, first of all, they have, like, a long time. So, like, as we are recording this Wednesday, May 27th, it's been about 12 weeks, so 3 months since the Rudy Gobert night, right? Where we just start canceling professional sports across the board in the United States. You know, we've already seen German soccer come back. We've seen, you know, professional golf is going to come back in 2 weeks. There's been, like, minor tennis tours that are coming back. All professional sports in Korea are starting. They are hoping to get baseball starting in Japan. I actually think that if the MLB owners were not being, like, super, super greedy, we'd have a plan to have baseball back. If they just said, whatever, we'll pay you your prorated contracts, like, let's go, they would do it for sure. And the NHL has a proposal, the NBA has a proposal. So, like, ready or not, the United States is opening back up. Things are happening, and I just, like, that snowball is so far down the hill that there's no turning it back. So I actually don't have much fear, like, in, like, dynasty leagues and stuff, of thinking, like, oh, well, there's just not going to be a season. Like, I now no longer think that is the most, like, I think the most likely scenario is neutral site games, no fans, basically, is what I think.
Yeah, I'd probably still bet against fans, at least for, like, the first half of the season. But I think we'll have games. I think college football is a whole nother story. But for the NFL, we're ready to go.
Yeah. So, you know, I think the first thing that we have to discuss as it pertains to thinking about football in 2020 is most teams like to get production from their rookies, right? Like, whether that be you draft a rookie quarterback, you want to start him right away. A lot of teams this year, because it was such a studly wide receiver class, a lot of teams were planning on having these rookie wide receivers probably be starting by week two or three, right? Like Jalen Reagor for the Eagles, Justin Jefferson for the Vikings, Henry Ruggs for the Raiders. Like, these are guys that in a normal season with rookie mini camps and OTAs and everything would be expected to be starting players almost from day one. I think no chance, basically, right? Like, I think almost no way are we going to see these rookie wide receivers playing until, I don't know, they've been with the team for, like, 3 or 4 months probably.
Yeah, so I think the rookie is going to be affected differently by position. So I think Joe Burrow is going to be playing regardless. He's just too good, and the Bengals have been working with him even before they drafted him. And then the other, like Tua, Herbert, Jordan Love, those guys probably aren't going to be playing until later into the season. But who knows? Maybe the Chargers get desperate or the Dolphins get desperate for
the Dolphins probably don't care, right? Dolphins are probably right. Cool winning 5 games this year. So they're probably like, whatever, Tua, take your lumps. I think the Chargers actually is really interesting, though, because theoretically they should be really good. You know, they had just this horrible record in 1-score games last year. But, I mean, they have loads of blue-chip players on defense and on offense. Like, it's so funny. Like, we think of their offense as being, like, average because it was bad last year. But Keenan Allen, about as good as you'll find as a slot wide receiver. People don't think of Mike Williams as a blue-chip player. I think he probably is. Like,
he's pretty damn good.
I mean, he led the NFL in yards per reception last year while, like, literally everyone was like, this guy sucks, you know?
Right.
Like, he's good. And Hunter Henry's good. You know, whatever. I guess the offensive line sucks for them, but like, I don't know. The Chargers could win 10 games, right?
Yeah, I mean, they have the talent to do it. I always have like just my reservations about them. It always seems like it's going to be better than what it is. Yeah, it is what it is. But then going back to the other rookies, I mean, I think the third round guys that have to go beat out a veteran, I don't think those guys are going to play for a while. I think like someone like Henry Ruggs, I don't see why he's not going to go lead the Raiders and targets in year one. I just think he's too dang good. They drafted him way too high. He's not somebody that excels only based off of like timing routes. He's just a playmaker. Same thing with like CeeDee Lamb. I think CeeDee Lamb's going to slide in as the wide receiver 3 to start. He's not a big timing guy. He's just a yards after the catch monster. And these guys are just too athletic. I don't see why they wouldn't produce maybe not nearly as high as they typically would, but I think this narrative might get completely blown out of the water for fantasy drafts. We'll see where it goes. But if everyone's scared, I'll be drafting these guys.
So I think that is pretty interesting because the early returns, so like over the last day, last 7 days in the Football Guys Players Championship, which is like, you know, if you're talking like high stakes fantasy football right now in May, this is where it's happening. And I'm getting this ADP from fantasymojo.com. It is it's $10. It's to me, it's a very worthwhile. Yeah, it's a worthwhile subscription if you guys are really trying to grind these drafts. So right now, Ruggs is going pick 121, wide receiver 47. I think that's fine. The guy who I would want though, Rager, wide receiver 49. I mean, like if they cut Alshon, right? Or if Alshon is like the rumors of him starting on the PUP, like Jalen Rager's, as long as he can play, right? As long as he's not like a bust, like, I don't know. I mean, there's some probability that he could be a bust. I think the same for Justin Jefferson. But like, if Rager is good, he is going to walk into 120 targets right away, I think.
Yeah, Rager's he's the toughest, highly drafted rookie receiver for me to analyze. He was just so bad at TCU last year. Like, there's no getting around that. He obviously broke out young. He's a better athlete than what he tested at the combine, but I don't know. Rager's a tough one for me. I would much rather have CeeDee Lamb and Henry Ruggs this year. I think Henry Ruggs is the guy that's going overlooked too much. I think people are freaking out over his production at Alabama. There's like obvious reasons why that happened. I mean, you don't see guys run as fast as Henry Ruggs. It's really that simple. The landing spot I think is okay. There's at least targets to be had there. I wouldn't be surprised if he's like a weekly flex option this year and he's being drafted after that.
I think that's I mean, I think I am probably more pessimistic about these rookie wide receivers because I don't even know if it's so much a question of can they do it, can they be out there and play, can they run the timing routes, can they get in sync. I think it's NFL coaches tend to run things like a meritocracy, and it's very rare where veteran players will just get benched just because a rookie was drafted ahead of them. Like for example, in Minnesota, it would not surprise me if Olabisi Johnson starts out the year playing ahead of Justin Jefferson.
Oh, that would be tragic.
Just because he's been on, or Chad Beebe or Tajae Sharpe, because that's just kind of the hierarchy of how things work in the NFL. Like, you know, Frank Gore is going to keep getting jobs. You know, you know, that like Daryl Henderson probably gets the first crack at the Rams job this year just because he's been on the team. You know, like that's just the way coaches
do decisions. I still think if this is going to be the standard line of thinking, that I'm just going to be way overweight on these rookie this rookie class. Just like in the competitive leagues, I think maybe your high school home league isn't thinking about this as in much detail. But if all of the expert leagues are going to be just fading all these rookies because of this, I think I'm going to be buying all of them. I think Cam Akers is another player that I'm going to be higher on. I think they didn't.
I'm all in. I love Cam Akers. Yeah,
I think he gets a three down roll like pretty quick into the season. I did a pass blocking column at Roto World, and Todd Gurley had the most pass blocking reps of among any running back last year, and then Darrell Henderson only had 6 last year, and in college he was awful on his pass protection, and Cam Akers had the third most pass protection reps out of any running back in college football last year. I think they drafted him for a reason. I think he's gonna get the three down role, and he's probably gonna be one of my favorite buys as like a RB2, RB3.
Well, actually, we should talk about that article, because that's a pretty good structural question, because people in fantasy football love to talk about pass protection, right? They love to be like, oh, well, this rookie can't pass protect, this vet can. So kind of just in terms of how it relates to fantasy football, what did your like study of pass blocking for running backs in the NFL, what did you find?
So on average, and it kind of ranges from like 22% down to like 10%. So about 1 in 6 pass plays, a running back is in pass protection. This data comes from PFF. But even beyond that, for a running back pass protection to fail, not only does he have to be not split out wide, he has to be not running a route. He has to be in pass protection. So now we're already into that 1 in 6 territory. Plus, a defender has to come to him. Like, there's a lot of pass protection reps where he's just waiting in the backfield and nothing happens. So then you have to get a defender to come through to him. He has to then miss his block with the quarterback still having the ball, and then it's a fail. So I think it's usually pretty overrated. I think that it can lead to playing time a little bit, but it's pretty noisy overall and just doesn't happen that much, where you should be fading that narrative more times than not. I went through the 10 highest drafted running backs and kind of mapped out how I think they'll fare, but for the most part, it's pretty overrated.
Yeah. So I think another thing that we should talk about in terms of, you know, limited OTAs and rookie mini camps and stuff is Jalen Hurts. I think that if the Eagles had a full offseason, you know, Hurts is already in the building. They've already had a chance to, you know, they sit down with Wentz, they sit down with Hurts, and they're like, look, Carson, you get hurt all the time, but, you know, Hurts is not here to take your job. Like, we want you guys to work together. Because I would imagine that's sort of the Eagles' thinking is, like, one, it's good. Like, you actually should have multiple good quarterbacks on the roster. Wentz gets hurt. Hurts comes in, plays well. They trade Hurts for a future first. Like, we saw the Patriots do this for years, right? They like to have a good backup quarterback so that they can that if that guy appreciates in value, they can trade him. You know, if they I'm sure they would love to have Jimmy G on the roster right now. But then also, I think the Taysom Hill packages for Hurts are going to be really limited relative to what they could have been, because, you know, they're going to get like 2 months to practice them, and they're going to need that practice time to, like, you know, run their actual offense, get that rust off the actual offense. So, like, my first blush projections for the Eagles had Hurts at 10% of the passing attempts and 5% of the team rushing attempts. I think that's probably too high now, just because there's just no way that they have that much time to install and work on that stuff with the first team offense. Like, they can practice that stuff second team, but, well, maybe they change NFL practice rules, right? So this is something that coaches have been complaining about for a long time. We can't tackle at practice. We can only practice for 2 hours. We can't do 2-a-days, you know, so on and so forth. Maybe that's part of the collective bargaining is actually longer practice times in the shortened off season. Like, that could be a thing.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I think with Jalen Hurts, I think he's going to be the quarterback 3 this season behind Sudfield. And
do they still have McCown, or is he gone? That.
I mean, how old is he at this point? He's got to be like 40 now.
He's really old?
Yeah. But yeah, I'm one of the biggest Jalen Hurts fans there is. I think that his long-term outlook is strong. I liked the pick where they have him, but I don't know. I think they actually like Sudfeld probably to fall of their own. And that Hurts probably is just going to – I mean, he's not going to be anywhere near the fantasy radar outside of Dynasty Leagues. And even if Carson Wentz got hurt, I wouldn't be surprised if Sudfeld started the first game, which would be sad.
Eagles fans would be rioting in the street, by the way, if right. Wentz gets hurt and Sudfeld starts, because they'd be like, you told us you drafted him for when Carson gets hurt. And then they're sitting there watching Nate Sudfeld, who, by the way, is like fine. Like he was actually kind of an interesting. Yeah. He was kind of an interesting college quarterback. Actually like the back in the first go round of college football DFS, back when it existed, like when I was in college, he was actually kind of a baller. So I would be sort of interested. So I think the biggest question, though, and we're already getting some results of this with early studies of the KBO and of the Bundesliga, is, you know, what happens when there are truly no fans in the stands? You know, what does that do to home field advantage? The excellent book Scorecasting, most people, you know, a lot of really smart people reference this book, which, you know, more or less found that home field advantage is actually a result of the refereeing decisions, right? So, you know, the way that home fans respond to poor calls or good calls or whatever, you know, it's just very human to respond to the stimulus around you. So last season was like one of the years where just fading home teams was huge. Like for the first 7 weeks, like home teams were like way, way, way under expectation against the Vegas lines. Could we just see that for a whole season until models start to adjust in terms of home and away?
Yes, I think over time we've seen the home field advantage drop. The referees is the biggest thing. I think another impact is just the inflammation of science, just sleep science, travel science, all these things matter a lot, and teams have just been getting smarter at that. I think one thing we have to watch for is just how NFL teams are traveling during COVID. Peter King had something in his column a couple weeks back where teams were thinking about doing same day travel, getting up early in the morning and then traveling to the stadium if it's not too far away, just so they can avoid the hotels where they're at a higher risk for getting COVID. And if that's the case, I want to be betting against that. I getting on a bus, I mean, even just going back to high school, like getting on a bus for like an hour sucks. Ride and then going to play a game, it's the worst. So I think getting on an airplane and then having to get warmed up and waking up even earlier than you usually would, that would be a problem. But yeah, with this year, I think it's going to be really interesting to look at it. I think, yeah, maybe a point and a half, 2 points would be as much as I would give it. I think it's going to be a little bit less than normal.
I mean, and there are probably some teams that are like even less suited to that, like to like getting up and trap, like literally like flying, like getting on a 3-hour flight and then going to play a football game. Like, I mean, that literally sounds miserable. Like this sounds like straight up horrible. And my guess is that just, it doesn't happen, right? Like the Players Association is going to be like, we would honestly rather potentially be exposed to COVID than take a flight the day we play a game. But if, I mean, again, there's so much money involved, like they're going to make these games happen. And if the safest way to make the games happen is flights the day of, I mean, they might do that. And this, by the way, is going to result in some terrible football if that happens. Like, there's going to be a lot of games where, you know, it's 21-0 at the end of the first quarter, and we get three quarters of absolutely no effort. Yeah, like we're gonna like backups in at halftime. I mean, we've actually already seen this in the German top flight soccer league that's been back, where like teams that are down 2-0 at halftime will make, because FIFA put an emergency ruling that teams can make 5 subs of the 11 rosters when the usual rule is 3. And when teams have been down 2-0, 3-0 at half, they've done literally like used all 5 substitutions and been like, just get us out of here with, you know, as little damage as possible, because we don't care. Like we just are, we don't want to be here anymore. And like from a fantasy perspective, like that's going to be insanely tilting, because you're not going to be able to project that. Like, you're not going to have a give up factor in your models, you know?
Right. I think, and I was going to save this for like the last thing I was going to say, but let's get it out of the way now. drafting handcuffs in these best ball leagues early, I think, is one of the biggest market inefficiencies. If there's going to be COVID testing multiple times a week, and if players get flagged, like if a running back gets flagged, I think there's a higher chance that handcuffs are going to be getting full-time roles. And I would much rather draft a Chase Edmonds, an Alexander Mattison, even like Darrington Evans, the backup for the Titans, rather than just like these guys that like a Jordan Howard that like maybe even if he gets a full-time role, still isn't going to do anything. Give me these direct handcuffs. I think there's just way more volatility than normal just with the traveling. And I mean, there's going to be some weird impacts that we're not even thinking about with all this stuff. And I want to be drafting the Chase Edmonds of the world.
Is zero RB dead, or did it just have the worst possible year ever in 2019? I literally am writing a piece right now for Sports Grid. Cause I don't know the answer. Like maybe zero RB is dead. I think probably not. I think people just respond most strongly to what they just saw. And 2019 was really the only zero running back guy who did super well was Latavius Murray. Like he was really the only guy who came in injury fill in running back one right away. And I'm like, that's all I can think of off the top of my head. I might find some different stuff when I go back in and look, but, Well, just first of all, before I narrate more, what do you think?
I think it's just going to be tough to win a fantasy league if you don't have like an absolute stud at running back, like the top five running backs.
True. Always true.
Right. I think it's even more so this year. Like I think the difference between like Saquon Barkley at two and like Zeke Elliott and obviously Christian McCaffrey. I mean, it's going to be tough to beat those teams if they stay healthy. So, I don't think like going Julio and like Tyreek Hill at the turn and like if you have like the 12th pick or something like that, I don't think the upside's probably high enough to beat those things. I'd probably rather take my chances on like Joe Mixon like breaking into that tier or something like that. It's tough. I think a modified zero RB approach could work if you had like Christian McCaffrey or whatever, and then you went like receiver,
that's,
tight end.
That's what I think
like
that the
work. But I think
the optimal strategy is.
Running backs in general is tough.
So I don't think that you can leave the first
I would want
two
to
rounds.
Get one of the top guys.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think we will see this year a huge win rate split after pick four. So that's after Christian McCaffrey, that's after Saquon Barkley, that's after Ezekiel Elliott, and that's after Dalvin Cook. I think you could argue Alvin Kamara in that tier. I think there are like injury risk, efficiency risk, Drew Brees risk. Like I think there's just a lot of, there's more systemic risk with Alvin Kamara than with those other guys. And then, you know, it's not going to surprise me if Derrick Henry, Joe Mixon, Nick Chubb, Aaron Jones, like it's not going to surprise me if one of those guys has like a sick, you know, 320 PPR point season. I think that there is an even greater amount of risk with those guys though. Like Nick Chubb might straight up get like 30 targets all season long, and he would have to just run insanely hot to, you know, do well at his ADP. Joe Burrow might struggle as a rookie, and Mixon wasn't involved much in the passing game last year. Very, very Chubb-like with that last year. And what we're seeing though, because after maybe the top 15 or 16 running backs or so, like kind of after David Johnson, there's like not even starting running backs left. There's just like pure and total uncertainty in a lot of these backfields. And so what we're seeing is these very, very, very risk heavy running backs are just getting like Todd Gurley's a second round pick in fantasy after getting cut and signing a $5 million deal with the Falcons. So I think my take as of right now is you really, really, really want to get one of those top four running backs. Like that is so, so absurdly optimal to get one of those guys. And I don't even actually think that Derrick Henry is a bad pick this year, just because there's no scenario where he does not get, you know, more than 280 touches in a healthy season. And like, that's coming from me who hates Derrick Henry. Right. But I, no matter how scarce the position is, I cannot justify second round pick on Todd Gurley, third round pick on Melvin Gordon. Like that is, it's so bad to do that instead of taking Amari Cooper, Kenny Galladay, DJ Moore. Like I will never be able to make those decisions basically.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think the other one that I'm really conflicted on is Travis Kelce. I think I would rather go Travis Kelce than kind of like the second tier wide receivers like Julio and DeAndre Hopkins, just because the position, if Travis Kelce hits, it's like he's going to be a ginormous upgrade even over George Kittle. Last year, Travis Kelce only converted like two or three of his like 19 red zone targets for touchdowns last year, which was like, I mean, Travis Kelce is simply like one of the biggest touchdown regression candidates in the entire NFL. And that's not even including just Patrick Mahomes has the upside to throw for 50 touchdowns again. I would rather go hunting for Travis Kelce like at the turn rather than these other wide receivers. But
you're
shooting for the stars.
Is that true in all formats or just like the FFPC, like tight end premium? I think I agree with you that if Michael Thomas and Devontae Adams are gone, I'm sitting there at pick 11 and I'm like, okay, do I want Tyreek Hill or do I want Travis Kelce? You know, do I want DJ Moore? I think you just go Kelce and you're like, you know what, if Joe Mixon has 300 PPR points, I guess I just lose then.
Yeah, I think at that point I would just go whoever you think the top running back is and then Kelce and then just swing for the fences at receiver from that point on. It's tough though. Like you said, the top four picks is just so optimal this year and you can't obviously control that. But because it's so optimal, you have to take like really big stands and like get really, really aggressive.
Yeah, yeah. I think that is certainly true. So in terms of betting, which we're circling all the way back around, I think something I'm going to be willing to do early on is like I'm just going to be more willing to bet on away teams, like away teams get like getting like 7.5, like even bad teams, because I think that even if like it's hard to reinvent the modeling overnight. Like it's hard for Vegas to do the modeling overnight. It's hard for the professional betting syndicates to redo all of their modeling as it pertains to COVID. And I think that it's likely, maybe even probable, that early on away teams are going to be getting too many points. Now, if it's a situation where the travel is just like absolutely like so shitty and miserable, maybe that's wrong. But I think my early supposition is that the away teams are going to be getting too many points.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how week one goes. I think everyone's going to overreact to whatever those results are. Like I'm hoping that like a bunch of home teams win and then everyone's like, oh my gosh, COVID's making the home field advantage come back or whatever. And then just like completely fade that. I think it's pretty tough to have a major conviction one way or the other. I'm just probably gonna be fading what everyone else thinks.
Yeah. I think it's very true that whatever happens week one is like, and not only will whatever happens week one be talked about in week two, like people are still going to be making decisions thinking about that in like week nine, right? Because people anchor so strongly to like the first thing that they see. So I certainly think that is true. So another really key discussion point in terms of figuring out what's going to happen in 2020 is how much of an impact will the Ravens' regular season success have on other teams? You know, do we think that even these teams that are ran by football guys and not by, you know, quantitative analysts, like, do we think that more teams are going to hire a fourth down decision maker to be down there on the sidelines? Do we think that more teams are going to be more aggressive in terms of, you know, going for it instead of kicking field goals, you know, trying not to punt? Or is the fact that they got dunked on in the playoffs by the Titans enough for the football guys to be like, you know what, it didn't work when it came down to it, it didn't work, it bit them in the ass, so we're not doing it either?
Well, I can tell you one thing. I know that the NFL is reading football Twitter and looking at all these analytical pieces. I think that on average, we're going to see more fourth downs. We're going to be seeing teams playing for optimizing wins, not like point differential. Like losing by 10 doesn't matter if you're not winning. Those type of things. But I think the biggest thing for fantasy is just the rate of adoption for these things is just going to be significantly different by team. And that's probably going to make the best team stand out even more so than the worst teams. And I think that discrepancy is only going to get bigger over these next couple seasons until the rest of the league has to, like, by default has to get with the program here. But I think it still takes a little bit of time. I think the Ravens are still going to be leading the way. The Chiefs, I'm hoping like a team like the Cardinals kind of gets with the program. But yeah, I think that the discrepancy is going to be the biggest thing here.
I mean, how big of a coward are the Arizona Cardinals? Like, was there a more cowardly team in the NFL last season? So they hire a young head coach. They do something which is very forward-thinking, analytically speaking, which is they spend a first-round pick on a quarterback. They realize that guy's not it. They trade him away for what now looks like – it looks like an amazing return, what they got for Josh Rosen, because Rosen can't play. Like, and maybe they knew that. Maybe they were just like, whatever. You know, we tried it. It didn't work. So getting anything back now and also getting a quarterback who does have the ability – to actually be good, like maybe that's pretty big. It does sort of seem that way. But I mean, Cliff Kingsbury coached these guys like a high school team, right? Like he didn't trust his quarterback. What was it? Can't remember if it was the Bengals game. There was a game where they kicked a field goal from inside the 5-yard line on three different occasions. I think it was the Bengals game where Kyler bailed them out with the game winning drive at the very end. But I mean, they were one of the most heavy field goal kicking teams in the NFL, and they never went for it on fourth down. They're never going to get there as an organization if like that's their plan. And are we hearing anything from them on changing that?
I would just be betting on Cliff Kingsbury kind of figuring things out. I mean, first of all, just being young helps. Like, he's not some old school football guy. I mean, he loves to pass the ball, go 3-4 wide receiver sets all the time. And I've been doing these other columns, just kind of looking at like schemes in the NFL, and running to the outside is huge analytically compared to running up the middle. And the Cardinals were way at the top of the list there. Same thing running from shotgun. If you're going to be running, run from shotgun. Cliff Kingsbury, way high up on the list with that one as well. I would guess that the Cardinals become one of the more forward-thinking teams over these next couple of seasons. I don't know if that happens immediately, but I think the Cardinals have more upside for like to get into the top five, top 10 with kind of just analytical thinking compared to a lot of the other teams, just because Cliff Kingsbury is young and we've seen him actually adapt some of those things that analysts have been talking about.
Yeah, I think that is hopefully true. Like I am hoping that is accurate, right? That Cliff is smart enough. He's young enough. He's not scared some of the way, you know, that these other guys are. I would hope that is true, because, you know, Kyler is great. And when you are gifted with a young, great quarterback, it feels irresponsible to sort of waste that time. I think the other question though is, you know, we do talk about the Chiefs like, okay, they're an elite analytics organization, and like, I don't know, is that true? Like, I think they've done enough weird stuff with like the way that they allocate salary cap and draft picks and stuff that like, I think Andy Reid really understands a lot of this stuff. You know, Andy Reid really understands, like, you know, it's just way better to pass than to run, especially when we have Patrick Mahomes. But like, I think, and I think one of the things that Veach got right is like, oh, we should just surround Mahomes with as many fast guys as possible. So they kind of luck into Tyreek Hill. Like, yes, Tyreek Hill is really good, but he was a third round draft pick, I think. Like, not
even fourth. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Late though, for sure.
Yeah, like this was. So they do not draft Tyreek Hill like this is their new, you know, A1 player or whatever. And wow, Tyreek Hill, fifth round. 28th in the fifth round.
Damn.
That's crazy. And if I remember correctly, Kelsey gets hurt as a rookie. He's drafted in the third round. So like, yes, they are. It takes talent to draft players who have the ceiling to be greater than what their draft position is. But if you are beating where all these players are getting drafted, like, doesn't matter how great you are. We know enough about the draft to know that it's enough of a crapshoot that like, you're sort of getting lucky on these guys. So they trade the first round pick, turn it into Frank Clark. Then the next year they spend a first round pick on a running back. Is there like, how much, I guess, sort of how much of the greatness of the organization can we ascribe to Brett Veach and the ownership and Andy Reid, and like how much of it is just that Patrick Mahomes is like the most transcendent player in football?
I mean, Andy Reid had Alex Smith led teams like competing to some degree.
This
for a
is
little
so
bit.
True. I mean, Andy Reid's a great coach.
Yeah. Like I would be, yeah. Andy Reid's like a top five coach for sure. For sure.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that Veach has done enough. Obviously like the first round running back thing was a little bit sketchy, but I think there was some solid reasons to go that route. Not completely well, backed on analytics, but like
Patrick Mahomes asked for him by name. So like,
well, that helps.
I mean, literally if you get Brett Veach alone, you're drinking a beer with Brett Veach and you go, all right, man, come on. Really, why did you spend that pick on Clyde Edwards-Helaire? And he goes, literally, the only thing that matters to us as an organization is that Patrick Mahomes thinks that his input is valued, and as long as we have Patrick, we're going to be one of the five best teams. I actually have zero problem with that, because nothing will impact wins or losses for that team more than having Patrick Mahomes playing well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think just in general, them just surrounding Mahomes with as much talent as possible and just playing for the pass, I think that just shows enough that they're an analytically driven team. Maybe their fourth down rates aren't as high as we'd want them to get, want them to be, but that could change in 1 year. Like that,
they were higher the Mahomes MVP year than they were last year. They were going for it and being more aggressive in 2018 than in 2019. And I think part of that was that Mahomes got injured and they were like, okay, like, yeah, it's great to score a lot of points, but like, we gotta protect our guy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think there's no reason not to be completely bullish on the Chiefs. Like I'm more likely betting on them becoming like a mini dynasty than like trying to fade them for these next couple of years.
I definitely think mini dynasty is in play for them. Like no doubt about it. I mean, you know, Mahomes is so great. They have like Tyreek and Hardman and Watkins. Like I know people have written Sammy Watkins off for dead, but he's on a 1 year, $5 million contract. Like all these guys are, I think Watkins is the oldest at 26 and Travis Kelce will wind down, but they're going to keep drafting. They're going to keep drafting pass catchers and stuff. So I'm definitely with you there. I do think, though, I think the fact that the Ravens lost to the Titans is actually going to keep a lot of the teams very close to what they were doing last year in terms of fourth down, in terms of like designed quarterback runs. Like I literally do think that because they lost in such a spectacular fashion to the Titans, it's going to keep a lot of their stuff from getting adopted.
Yeah, that would be so on brand for the NFL, just to one game after the Ravens were destroying everybody. And then you just see the Titans were like really nowhere near the Chiefs later. That would be hilarious. I wrote down some teams I think could pass more and less this season.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Compared to last year. So teams that I think are going to pass more, Steelers. I mean, that's just Big Ben coming back, obviously. The Vikings, you kind of have a situation where they're losing a lot of defensive players and their offense isn't going to be as good without Stephon Diggs. And like even just last year, like Kirk Cousins was like playing out of his mind. So I think that the Vikings are going to be forced to pass more. I think the Broncos can pass a little bit more just because they have a little bit better talent. And if they have Drew Lock, maybe they want to just like throw him into the deep end right away. And then on the other side, teams that are going to be passing fewer times, the Chargers moving from Phillip Rivers to Tyrod Taylor or Justin Herbert, I think they're going to be wanting to run the ball a decent amount. The Patriots, I'm just worried that they're just not going to be able to run nearly as many plays just because their offense just could be awful. And then the Buccaneers, just they're not going to be sitting back there with Jameis Winston having to throw the ball 50 times per game. The team should be a little bit better. So those are the six teams I'm kind of eyeing this year.
Yeah, I think that is likely to be the case. What do you see as the range of outcomes for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Like, do you think Tom Terrific's coming in? They're winning games. The defense seems like it should be a little bit better. Like, what do you think the range of outcomes is there? And then what do you think is the most likely?
Yeah, I think it's hard to argue against the upside of the team. Just the secondary is improving and they're really young. Their front seven was pretty dang good last season. Of course, the receivers are one of the best in the game. And I think Tom Brady can play a little bit. I don't think he's a top 10 quarterback going into this year, but I don't think he's like the 30th quarterback either. I think they have enough upside to win the Super Bowl. Now, like a median projection, probably like 9 wins. Like the Saints, I think, are still the class of that division and maybe even the class of the NFC. Yeah, I think there's just more paths to things just not fully working out with the Bucks. There's no way they're going to be bad, but I think like 9 wins is probably the most realistic outcome for them.
Yeah, I think 9 wins seems about right. I mean, I am looking to probably be short on them just because, I think the range of outcomes for a 43-year-old quarterback includes like a lot of, this guy is worse than Gardner Minshew type stuff. And it seems like literally no one believes that. Like, just no one is talking about how Brady can't do it, right? Like that is not a popular opinion.
Well, it's just like impossible to model because no quarterback is playing this old. And Tom Brady seems like he's just different. Like, he just takes care of his body. I mean, he's got all these crazy pills, like he's come out with like the coronavirus vaccine and everything.
He's the snake oil salesman.
Right, exactly. But like, I mean, you can't deny it. He's in like pretty damn good shape. Like he still looks the part out there. So I don't think we're going to be falling off the cliff, but I mean, it's certainly within the range of outcomes. I think probably the Bucks have the biggest range of outcomes out of any NFL team this year. But everyone is always just saying like the good part of this outcome. So I think probably 9 wins is probably my favorite thing. I think what their win total is at 10 right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the under on that for sure.
Yeah. I do too.
Okay. Does the league become harder or easier to gamble on this season? Do you think that this is a year that is better for the books, better for the gamblers?
Well, I think if you're a good gambler, which is like already very hard to do.
Yeah, a lot of people listening to this think they meet that criteria, right, and right. They don't.
Right, no, for sure. But let's say you want like a lot of volatility.
Uncertainty.
Right. So like if you're an investor right now, you want to be trading Bitcoin every day, not bonds in like the stock market. You just want crazy swings. And I think this year you're going to be getting that. I think there's going to be a lot of noise though. Like I think people are going to be thinking that there's trends that just don't even exist and are going to be just chasing their tail a little bit. I'm more like inclined to be betting more this year. Just to kind of figure out, there's just so much game theory. And if you're just not making models, and I mean, the fact of the matter is your model probably isn't beating Vegas anyways. You just got to be figuring out these little gaps that are just different in 2020 versus the other normal seasons. And I think that if you are thinking about things, that this should be a better year for you.
I think that's probably true. Yeah. I tend to agree that just it puts the books at a disadvantage when there's more volatility, just because it's harder for the books to set a line that can take a ton of pressure, right? That can take a ton of money when they know less. Like they just have less information on hand, or they have the same amount of information as the public. And if they have the same amount of information as the public, you know, a lot of the public makes really bad bets. So it's likely that people who are even without modeling, that they are able to, get pretty good numbers. Like I think that betting on games on Sunday night when like lines first come out, like that I think is going to have more of an edge. There's like more reason to do that this year than other years, I think.
Yeah. I think I just thought about this. Do you think there's probably just not going to be as much media coverage like day to day at the facilities, unless like things get way better and like injury reports and stuff?
Yeah.
We're literally just going to be looking at like the actual injury report and like not be looking at, oh, so-and-so of this Tribune says that this guy was like looking good. Like we're going to see a lot of questionable tags and like actually going to have to be trying to figure things out by ourselves unless there's more media coverage than I'm kind of thinking about right now.
Yeah. I mean, and maybe, like, it, certainly it is in the range of outcomes that the coronavirus is really only deadly to, you know, people with immune diseases, you know, obesity, lung conditions and stuff, and that a lot of this stuff was an overreaction to early estimates. I tend to think it's probably not the case, but, you know, I am not, I am not a doctor. I'm not an epidemiologist, so I don't know. But that's kind of the way that it's trending, right? It's trending towards opening it back up, and maybe just, you know, training camp happens and fans are in the stands and whatever, whatever. But if not, if we are still, you know, wearing masks and doing all, you know, doing all of this stuff, my guess is that it's going to be a hard year to figure out injury stuff. You know, hints that we get from the media about like, oh, this running back looks like he's going to take over, right? Or this wide receiver is looking dominant, or, you know, Mitch Trubisky can't get it together in practice. Like, we're not going to know that stuff because all practices are going to be behind closed door practices because media members are just not going to be there. Yeah, that's a very good point.
Just, and pulling back the curtains with RotoWorld blurbs, usually you have an idea of who's going to be on the injury report just because there's like just rumors circling from the reporters. But like on Friday and Sunday morning, when like just there's a huge news dump, if we have no idea, it's just going to be tough to like figure out all at once, especially like Sunday morning, you have 90 minutes to figure out all your lineups. And there could be situations where like there's like four or five running backs that it's literally like a coin flip if they're going to even be playing or not. And that's why I just go back to the handcuff thing, especially if they have to be testing like two or three times a week to make this thing happen. It's, I would just be wanting to play it a little bit safer with more of these handcuff RBs.
Yeah, I think that's probably good. Analytics Mike McCarthy. Are you buying or are you selling? Are you in or are you out on Analytics McCarthy?
Well, the first thing is you have to realize that he did nothing wrong up in Green Bay.
And Mike McCarthy did nothing wrong.
And Aaron Rodgers' decline was the reason why the Packers weren't going to the Super Bowl consistently. Once you figured that out, then you can kind of get into the analytics part of it. I think the one thing is keeping Kellen Moore in his same position was a huge, huge thing, just not only for the team in general, but kind of just betting on McCarthy becoming more analytically driven. I hope Jerry Jones is like okay with all of it. I mean, he drafted CeeDee Lamb, which is like definitely the analytical way to do things. I mean, he was like, CeeDee Lamb's just like such an analytics dude for just modeling, just in terms of basically of everything, and then helping Dak Prescott out. So yeah, I think you got to be really, really bullish on the Cowboys offense. They have so much talent, and the coaching staff looks pretty good to me. I think we're probably selling McCarthy a little bit short here.
Well, yeah, he did nothing wrong. They kept Kellen. I mean, I was so afraid they were gonna frickin' fire Kellen Moore, man.
That'd be like, so sad.
I mean, best case scenario was Garrett gets fired, they bring in a competent head coach, and then keep Kellen Moore calling the plays. Like, this was like, you couldn't have dreamed up a better situation for the organization than that. And then they actually did it. Like, that was the most plus EV outcome they could have possibly done. It felt so great. It felt so great to actually have them do that. And then they draft CeeDee Lamb, and they drafted like only good players in the draft. And, you know, if we know anything about the Dallas Cowboys, it's that it's going to be followed by one of the most disappointing seasons of all time. But like, they actually, even being the Cowboys, like a super public team, they get steam anytime they do well. I still think they represent, you know, pretty good values where they are going now. Like, or in terms of like odds for the Super Bowl and to win the division and stuff.
Yeah. What do you think their upside is? Like NFC championship? Like, do you think they can like actually make it to the Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl? Like, what are your thoughts with them?
I mean, so let's just take a look at the really good teams in the NFC, right? So we have the Seahawks, who are basically Russell Wilson. And I mean, how many blue chip players Scrubs. Do they, yeah. How many blue chip players do they have left? You know, not that many, but they are going to very routinely make the playoffs because he's so good. The 49ers, I basically think, are one of the like running hot over 3 months style teams ever. They have this caveman football, and they, you know, they happen to just play a team that was, I mean, literally there has never been a worse 13-3 team than the Green Bay Packers. So, you know, that gets us to the Packers, who spend all offseason, you know, making the one hope that the Packers would have of actually being an elite team that could win a Super Bowl would be Aaron Rodgers recaptures some of that magic. He feels great about the game of football again. Him and Matt LaFleur are getting along, and basically they're like, "No, we're going to turn you into Alex Smith, and we're just going to ground and pound. We're going to draft a fullback and AJ Dillon. So we don't care about you." The Saints, I mean, every offseason we want it to be the Saints' offseason, and then by week 9, Drew Brees' arm is dead. He's got nothing left. They lose a home playoff game to Kirk Cousins and the Vikings. Like, I'm sorry, Drew Brees. I'm sorry, New Orleans. Like, I can't take you seriously if you're losing home playoff games to Kirk Cousins. And then we get to, like, the Eagles, who I think are a great team. Like, I do actually think the Eagles are a really good team, but
they are good. They really are. So I
think there's huge competition inside their own division, but like, yeah, I mean, would it be unreasonable for Dallas to win 12 games and win the NFC to me? Absolutely not. Like, there just is so little resistance in the NFC. I mean, there's so little resistance everywhere because there are not really great teams in the NFL anymore. There's the Chiefs and the Ravens, and to me, those are the only great teams that there are, and then everyone else is good.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the Chiefs and the Ravens are in the class of their own, and then kind of everyone else is chasing them. And I think you made a good point. The Eagles and the Cowboys, I think those are two, like, the most, like, up and down. The offenses are good. And I mean, the Cowboys have some work to do on defense, of course, but I mean, that offensive line with the play callers and stuff, I mean, that's, they're going to be like a top five offense. That's a lock. So I think they can compete for sure.
Yeah. All right. Last thing, the best preseason bets that you can make right now. The first one for me is obviously Kyler to win all the awards, MVP, offensive player of the year. We talked a little bit before we started recording about, like, because of the uncertainty of, like, are they really going to get 16 games in? I think they probably do, but, like, you know, if you're betting overs on wins, you're betting overs on passing yards and stuff like that, you might just run bad if they only play 12 games or whatever as a result of the coronavirus. I don't think that's going to happen, but that is a pretty good point. So, like, my bets right now are, you know, just Kyler to win things, basically.
Yeah, my favorite player prop is Patrick Mahomes for MVP at plus 400. I think this should be priced at like plus 200, plus 250. I think his passing touchdown upside is just exceedingly higher than everyone else's. If you're building player projections, you look at that touchdown category, he's going to be like 4, 5, 6 touchdowns better than anybody else. And the Chiefs just have basically no holes on their roster right now. And they're going to be winning like 12 games. Like, you can be like semi-confident in that. I don't think anybody else in the entire league, you can say the same, except for maybe Lamar Jackson, but Lamar Jackson has just a little higher injury risk, and there's a little more volatility when you're playing the way the Ravens do. That I think Patrick Mahomes at plus 400 is the best bet right now. And then along similar lines, Joe Burrow for Offensive Rookie of the Year. I just think it's usually a quarterback award. I don't think any of the other quarterbacks are going to be playing enough to compete with him. I think the Bengals have underrated weapons around them. If Jonah Williams could block a little bit at left tackle, I think the Bengals could be a sneaky fantasy team. And then if you want to get a little bit freakier on the odds, I like Cam Akers.
For Offensive Rookie of the Year?
Yeah. I think he's going to get that 3-down role. And I think he's a really good player. And the odds aren't as high. I think everyone's kind of chasing Jonathan Taylor and Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Cam Akers is kind of the guy that you can catch the longest odds on.
I mean, it's long been my take that I think that Clyde Edwards-Helaire is gonna be like the most efficient, but Cam Akers is, like, I just think they're like, you know what, we tried it with Daryl Henderson and it just doesn't work. So I'm with you on that one. And I like Dallas to win the Super Bowl. You can still get that at like 20-1 some places, and I'm in on that one as well.
Yeah, I sprinkled in Dak Prescott to win MVP as well. I think he's the like second or third tier quarterback that has like realistic odds of winning that thing. He was so good last year, and everyone just still is like not convinced that Dak Prescott's good, which is like mind-boggling, but it is what it is. And then for fantasy football, some guys that I'm eyeing is Robert Woods. I mean, he was like top 12 in a lot of these advanced metrics that I'm using, like expected fantasy points. he was balling out. And I just think they're going to be using more 12 personnel. And I think that Cooper Kupp, you go ask him to go win routes on the outside, you're just not going to be getting the same player that everyone's valuing. And Robert Woods was just so good down the stretch last year. Same thing with Tyler Higbee, that those are going to be the two guys I want on the Rams along with Cam Akers, and it's not Cooper Kupp. And then the last guy is Hayden Hurst, who I had to just, like, right when I saw that he was getting all these targets, like, he's going to be getting a ton of targets with the
fact that
they lead the league in available targets from last season. I just looked at I went back and watched every Hayden Hurst target last year, and I was, like, pleasantly surprised of, like, this guy is, like, kind of good. Like, he's obviously
the mocker. Yeah, he can move a little bit.
I mean, yeah, he was overdrafted in the first round. He was older, and, like, of course, like, we should trash him for that. But, I mean, he was pretty good last year. Even, like, routes run, or yards per routes run, and then, like, yards per target, EPA per target, he was, like, really, really high up on the tight end rankings that I think we should be – I think we're kind of underselling his talent along with his opportunity, that he's, like, easily in the top eight – tight ends for me this year, and he's being drafted as, like, the tight end 11 or whatever.
There we go. All right, everyone, follow Hayden on Twitter at Hayden Winks. Here's one good last question. The price of Bitcoin on December 31st, 2020 will be what?
Let's see. I will go 10.8. So
10.8. There we go.
Yeah.
Good price target. All right. Everyone, follow Hayden on Twitter at Hayden Winks. Read his work on RotoWorld, and we will be back soon.